Shine.fm presents Stronger Together, a show about growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. Here's Seth Tower Hurd.
You know, okay, fine, he's my friend, but he's also the author of one of my favorite books. It's called Generational IQ, Christianity Isn't Dying, Millennials Aren't the Problem, and the Future is Bright, which you've heard a lot. If you've heard a lot of naysaying about, oh man, Christianity just ain't going to make it in the United States, Hayden would have something to say about that. We're mainly going to be talking about something that's addressed in the book, which is how to deal with, you know, family situations around the holidays. But real quickly, because I think this is good news, why is Christianity not dying?
Well, it's not dying because, statistically speaking, in the United States, Christianity is not even close to dying. You've heard that in three generations, Christianity will be gone. Well, that's statistically not true. Now, people aren't answering surveys that there is involved in religious organizations. But then again, people were never as involved. They've always lied on surveys about how much they are in church or religious their religious practices. And so, you know, a lot of those people just no longer lie about it. They're open about it. So Christianity really hasn't had a significant drop. Church attendance has only dropped 10% in the last 40 years. And so, you know, we're far away from the disappearance of the family. We're far away from the disappearance of Christianity. We may not be able to say Christmas in business or stores, but we're far away from the disappearance of the mass of Christ.
Okay. And if I can just give a quick aside on that, that actually you can see that as a blessing, because if somebody's, you know, dare I say, a fake Christian, it's pretty hard to share the gospel with them, because they're like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of into that. Yeah, yeah. But if they're just open about what they believe, then you have an opportunity to, you know, share why you follow Jesus.
It opens up all kinds of conversations, and all kinds of conversations that people who used to assume we'd have the same beliefs and the same conversations at Christmas time in our households, especially if we're a religious family or family of faith. Now we have to figure out, what do we do with family members who are now not as willing to say, oh yeah, I'm a Christian, or I'm a a dedicated Christian, a serious Christ follower, I don't believe the same things, or I don't care anymore. Those are all conversations people have in their families now. Now that there are multiple generations, and now that people are more open with saying, nope, that's not me.
Okay, so we are just weeks away from getting in the car, making that drive. Christmas music is on the, you know, on the radio, and it's supposed to be a time of anticipation of gathering together with your loved ones. It's also a time when people have a lot of anxiety about, how do I handle, you know, my my non-believing siblings coming back? How do I handle my non-believing children coming back that are adults? How do I handle, you know, the fact that I've got kids that are old enough to ask questions now, and uncle or aunt, whatever, is super anti-faith, and we're all together around, you know, a holiday around this guy Jesus that we all disagree about. So what do you do there?
Well, I think the first place to start is to acknowledge what a lot of people are struggling with, that it is now a pluralistic world, which means we have multiple answers or a plural answers in our own family. And so for years, we've just assumed, well, you know, it's a Christian nation. We're a Christian family. This is here in the heartland of the Midwest where I live. It's a Christian part of the country. And we just need to let go of that. Kind of like this, whisper the theme song to Frozen in the back of your mind and just kind of let it go and realize that. I love what Ed Stetzer, one of the great researchers in the, of a church sociology, religion sociology, said. We don't have home field advantage anymore. That's what's changed. Christians can no longer just assume things. So I think the most important thing is not to start by assuming things, and therefore not assume you will give the same that everyone will give the same answers to the 8-year-old who's asking questions.
Okay, so how do you talk to your kids about that then? Like if you got young kids, you know, and that's a situation, and you know that in the one relative, just that's like their thing. You know, they, you know, my family will talk about baseball year round because we're baseball obsessed. And that'll always come up. I know you may have a relative that's like very anti-faith. And if you got an 8-year-old, they're going to probably, you know, they're not a toddler anymore. They're probably going to pick up on that. So what do you say going into that?
The It's funny because one of my favorite comedy writers, Garrison Keillor, tells a story about a family that grew up Lutheran and is trying to get their kids shaped up into what we do, what grandma and grandpa do before they eat. So that, you know, they've got 10 minutes to get them into good Lutherans before they hit town. It's kind of just the opposite for families that are, you know, of course we're going to pray and of course we assume certain things to help prepare people for, you know, Aunt Sue's boyfriend doesn't believe the same way we do about God or about Jesus. And it is not an unfortunate or an uncomfortable conversation to begin to talk about the fact that they are growing up in a world where people have significantly different beliefs. And if we have them in our own family, and, you know, if he brings it up, then you can have the same conversation with him. Well, you know, here's what we tell our 8-year-old. And, you know, when the time comes, I'm sure when he's older, we will let you sit down and share what you think about the world with us there.
Okay.
And we'll have a conversation with that. But you know, at 8, thank you for sharing your opinion. We've already told him that you don't agree, that you don't believe in God, or you're not positive there's a God if you're an agnostic. And yeah, you know, free country. And we'll go ahead with our Christmas prayer, if you don't mind.
Okay. Let's talk about, you know, I've seen situations with friends where it's like, you know, they have a sibling and that doesn't, you know, is not a follower of Jesus, maybe grew up in church, would say that they don't believe. And then the whole family gets back together and the parents just blitz this evangelism thing that just doesn't work. You know, it's like, well, we're all going to go to church and we're going to do this and you're going to be reminded of the way we raised you. And it's like, I don't think that's the way people find their way back to faith.
Well, I did spend an entire chapter on that in this book about what's the research show? What's the sociological research show about how people come to faith and how people lose their faith? And there's some interesting studies and some great conclusions on that. The single number one, absolutely don't do it mistake, is to preach to a person after they get over about 23 or 24. If you turn into Robo for Jesus cop, you will do more damage faster than any other single thing you can do. So I've watched parents do this. We are going to read the nativity story 5 times in 4 days. If it's your family practice to read the nativity story as it was mine growing up and it is mine with our own children, then read it. Don't triple it, or your kid who has walked away from faith will think, oh no, this is all for me.
Yeah. I'm going to bring up a phrase that's used on social media sometimes called Jesus juking. You know, where I, just to tell a quick story, I have a tattoo on my wrist of the zip code of the farm I grew up on, and actually a pretty prominent Shinedown FM artist said, well, what's that? You know, what's that number? I said, it's the zip code of the farm I grew up on, 7th generation farm. Just kind of a reminder of what I want to live up to in life. And he just looks me dead in the eye and he's like, well, with Jesus, we don't have to live up to anything. And I'm like, okay, I just feel really weird and I want to go away from you, but I work in radio, so I can't. So the phrase has popped up around that Jesus juking. And when you're trying to push and push and push, a lot of times I think maybe that's where it comes off. So if you got parents like that, if you got a relative like that, you might actually have to say, let's chill on this thing then.
Well, a couple of things. The first one is, if you're most people who are going to be listening to Shine are going to be people of faith. You know, if you are a person who grew up in faith, aren't so sure what you think about it, you just need to say, I don't know what I think about it. And listen to your family members share what they think about it. Here's the irony. There are so many people today who are like, you know, I think a person ought to have their own narrative, their own story. But unless you're really religious, and then you can't have that narrative and you can't have that story. You know what? Everybody has a right to the table in this new world of it's true for you, but may not be true for me. Listen, it won't kill anybody to listen to their family members tell their story. And you can also say, you know, right now, I don't know what I think about that. And you can dodge that. And if people do the fourth nativity story, you just roll your eyes to yourself and wait it out, because it doesn't last forever and they mean well by you. For most people, they mean well.
Let's get into the details that wind up being such a big thing. You know, One of the things I found out after I got married is, like, now you have this conversation of who do you buy gifts for what year, because there's all these more people. You know, and I come from a family that, going into Thanksgiving every year, I know there's going to be about 80 people because I grew up on a farm and people had a lot of kids because of the labor. It's free that way, you know. So how do you start to have a plan for those things that come up every year? And if I can maybe throw one more piece on that, a lot of times it's like your siblings' in-laws that wind up being the problem. It's like, well, you know, we have this every other year thing going on, but now the siblings' in-laws insist on this, and all of a sudden it throws off all of our family. What do you do with all that? Like, you know, timing and gifts, and it really is blending families there. So how does that work?
You know, it's not significantly different from the same principles in terms of what do you do if you want to when you feel caught in the middle with your parents and a sibling who's straying, and your parents are like, help us get them back to Jesus. Chill and breathe is one of the absolute best bits of advice in any situation. Just take a moment, catch your breath. It is probably not as bad. What do you do with presents? I think this is where you talk about money. I am 26. I don't have a lot. $33,000 of average student loans for an undergraduate degree if you've finished university, and I'm trying to piece all this together. And plus the new, whether you're getting the note or the new iPhone, both of those are $1,000. So what do you want from me? Huh? And so I got to have a phone. I got to have a tool. And so point is, I think we can talk fairly openly. Here's what I can afford to do. What would you recommend? What are our family expectations? Because as time goes on, and we've had our first grandkid since the last Christmas, and my wife is insane. My wife has bought toys for the baby to come for a week for our home before she begins the toy shower and clothing shower, which is her first grandchild. So suddenly the standards go up as people make more money, as their children are older, and their expectations go higher. And if you get something for everyone, you're either making crafts for 2 months or you're broke. And so get really clear on expectations and just say, here's what we can do.
And then some people are going to be upset though, right?
And literally you will have family members try to talk you through things you shouldn't have bought. Well, you shouldn't have bought that phone. Well, you don't really need that. And then you could have afforded to get junky stuff for other people in your family. And so there's only thing you can do in those situations is listen and restate a boundary. You listen and restate a boundary. Here's the decision that I've made, or if you're a couple, here's the decision we've made. Now it gets even more, let's go drill even deeper, Seth, because you've made it complex enough. But let's say you're not married. Let's say it's just you're engaged, or you're serious and you're not even engaged yet. Well, I know she probably doesn't want to do that. Or, well, you know, you're not married yet. You need to go to your own homes. No, but we are pretty serious about getting married. We're planning to do that. I would expect to be engaged by next year. And so we're going to begin a pattern of where we're going to go. This one is hard. I can say for firsthand, it's hard on parents. It feels like there's a hole. They used to be here every Christmas and every Thanksgiving, and now we have to share.
Yeah.
Now that we help pay for plane tickets, I'm like, yeah, I don't come so often. But but it leaves a hole. You're like, this one just doesn't feel right because you're at their house. And even if you love their your kids' in-laws like I do, you're still like, oh, well, we'll see them at Christmas or we'll see them this summer. Or it's just a bigger deal than many people realize. For the people in their lives, they have to get used to a new seating arrangement, a new adjustment. It feels empty. It's like, oh, don't do that.
Yeah.
So if you acknowledge that, I know it's hard, but here's what we're going to do.
And, you know, if I can just pull a story from my own life, there are also just weird situations you got to just handle as you handle. Yeah, I actually bounced something off you because we're friends. And, you know, as we went into Thanksgiving, my wife's best friend's grandma died. And Thanksgiving for my family, you know, is... huge. It's multicultural because part of my family are these crazy redneck Asians who are F-150 farming, pickup truck driving Asians. And so there's like, you know, there's the meal and then there's card games and then we go bowling till midnight. I mean, it is my favorite holiday. I'm like, oh, I don't want to miss that. And I know that, you know, Amanda needs to be there for her best friend. And you're like, dude, just for this one, just go to different places. It's just one holiday. She needs to be there. You're going to be super sad if you, you know, if you miss your
Well, you had to miss it last year.
I missed yours last year
for this project that she was involved in.
Yeah. And so you're like, you know, just, it's okay. Just one time, don't make a habit of it, but you know, it's a funeral. It happens. And, you know, and you don't get to see your family that much. So it's okay. So there, I guess there are just like, sometimes you just have to have common wisdom of just like, this is life and we're not going to make this a standard. But for this holiday, you know, there was a layoff. We had to move. Something happened. Somebody's sick. It ain't going to be like this forever, but this is just what we got to do.
You said it well. Figure out where your boundary is. Communicate it. And they'd be willing to flex for situations that are well out of the norm. Your wife's best friend's grandmother dying, who held the family together, and then no one else is able to come back for Thanksgiving. And it would be an incredibly lonely Thanksgiving within a month of her grandmother's death. Can you guys come to Thanksgiving? No, because this is Seth's favorite single day of the year, but I'm coming. Oh, I don't want to split you guys up. No, we want to. This is what we want to do.
Yeah. Hey, you know, and that's what I realized, you know, when you talk me through that, it's just like, you know, this is a chance for me. Quite frankly, I'm not going to do any good by being there myself. You know, I mean,
unless you want to play cards and go bowling with Seth in honor of your grandmother, he's probably going to be a little crabby. And so why don't we let him go to Thanksgiving,
you know,
redneck party town?
Yeah. So, you know, if you are facing a weird situation this year, like sometimes you just gotta have a weird situation and realize that, you know, God provides and directs in strange ways. And sometimes God calls you to console somebody. And then, you know, just realize that it's not I haven't been there since second grade. So I don't have the context to really be a comfort.
My wife was really wise on this. You gotta, and people get over it. My mom always went to the family farm for Christmas because they were farmers and couldn't leave the cattle.
Yeah.
And then my wife said, oh, great. Well, so you're going to come Christmas Eve to our house. And my wife said, no, we'll have Christmas Eve with our own children and then open presents in our house and build our tradition. And then we'll be down for lunch. My mom said, well, I just expected that you would. I've never actually seen children open presents in our own home. And my wife said, oh, that would be sad, wouldn't it? And my mom said, why didn't I put my foot down? Your wife did it after 2 years. She's like, your wife did exactly the right thing. Yeah, we'll see you at noon. And, you know, so they were up at 6 anyway when they were little. So we were down in the car and 2 hours away by noon and everybody was together and it worked out just fine. We opened presents in my mom's house. And she's like, why didn't I start a tradition? The irony is if you're not angry, if you're just clear on what you and your family want to do and it's reasonable and it's caring and it's not, I'm so angry with you. If you unmesh from the emotions that can happen with family and stress, you'll do better at it. And lastly, just remember that Excedrin did a study on headaches. And between Thanksgiving Day and Christmas Day, 30% of all headaches that females have and 18% of all headaches that males have in the entire year take place in that magical month between family and family. And so we just need to give ourselves a break a little bit there and figure out what we're going to do this year so that we actually enjoy it rather than get headaches from it.
Okay, so enjoying it looks like, you know, just saying, here's when we can be there and here's when we can't. And then I would say probably the other part of enjoying it is, you know, I mean, we're past Thanksgiving, we're going into Christmas. Maybe it's a little late for this year, but like actually figuring out a little ahead of time, like how much money is going to be spent because, man, around holiday stuff, it's like it can just be another thing, another thing, another thing. And I'm not even talking about buying presents for people. I'm just talking about, you know, stuff.
All the things. How many wonderful traditions can you jam in until you would just like to punch Santa Claus in the nose? And so suddenly, you know, you're like, I don't like Christmas. And, you know, everybody's like, you know, put Christ back in Christmas. The most important thing we have to do is just knock about a third of the good things that we've built up around the holiday so we can unbury the manger.
Man, that's a very vivid mental picture. Wow. So
what's a third of the stuff you're going to cut? You know, when we had four kids, we said, I'm sorry, you can't do a sport and band and two other activities. Everybody, we got four kids. Everybody gets one big thing and maybe a side thing.
And that's not just
the same thing with that, all the other stuff at Christmas. What are the main things? And then what's the stuff we'll get to if we can?
And that's not just for the, you know, for the scheduling. That's also for the kid that you're going to be fried out of your mind trying to keep up with that stuff. So it is just, can't make the, may not be able to make the office Christmas party. I may not be able to make the church small group Christmas party. I probably, even if I can go to the church small group Christmas party, I cannot, you know, prepare an ornate, piece of like appetizer for the meal. I just
Seth,
can't do
once
that
again,
stuff.
My wife was wise here. She said to our small groups or our Sunday school classes we've taught through the years, nobody wants another thing. And we all have nothing. We live in Chicago. We have nothing to look forward for a month and a half until the first thaw. Let's do our small group or our Christmas party in the middle of January when we got nothing else to do. And everybody's like, what a great idea. So we pull back out, dumb sweaters. And, we pick the house that still hasn't taken their lights down.
And you fake the whole thing.
And we just have everybody's like, this is such a great idea. No presents. The holiday's over. And people just come in and bring in some stuff. And we have our holiday party when people enjoy each other and want something to do rather than are stressed out of their minds. It was just wise on her part to say, wouldn't it be better not to add one more thing?
And the store-bought eggnog and cookies are on clearance at that point.
Well, the eggnog's probably gone. I mean, probably bad. So you got to drink it fast. You get great prices on stale cookies.
That's so gross.
Christmas cookies are bad anyway. Do they offer Christmas cookies all year long? No, because my grandmother's nutballs, God rest her soul, her good Bohemian nutballs turned hard within 2 days that you could shoot them out of a flintlock. And you do not buy, Nestle does not serve Christmas cookies because they're bad. And by the way, if you're a wonderful person that you're stuck in a Currie and Ives postcard, truly listen to Frozen and let it go. Just let it go. Two trees are good enough. Your kitchen Christmas tree, you can let that one go. And they don't want the calories anyway. So the store-bought Christmas cookies work just fine. And I know your grandmother would look down upon you, but she's not been here for 10 years. You can have your own Christmas now, and it will all get better for everybody if we just cut a third of the things from our list. And we have time for the stuff that matters.
Man. Would you recommend, even though this is coming up very quickly, sitting down, legal pad, things we're doing, things we're not doing, things we're buying, things we're not buying, and then you're not sitting there at the grocery store being like, oh, Jiminy, they asked me to come to this and bring a thing, and that's another $30, and I don't even want to go. If you just have a list, does that really clear up most of the issues?
You know, most couples, in some good premarital counseling, they actually ask people to go through holidays. There are four things John Gottman discovered that will cause some tensions in a love relationship. And, kissing is one of those things. Kiddos are one of those things. Money is one of those things. And number four, our families and how we coordinate our larger family. So Christmas and Thanksgiving throw us into the wall at 70 miles an hour of the fourth biggest thing that caused tensions in love relationships. You may have to take that list and check it twice, like 4 or 5 years in a row, till you finally find your pattern. But you as a family unit, you as people who are engaged, have to figure out how you're going to make it work. You as a person who's, you know, and a lot of millennials, for example, you know, the average age of millennial marriage is now 28 for men and 26 and a half for women.
Yeah, I was 32, so I was...
That's right. So you got to have your own legal pad of what I'm in and not in for. As a single person. Now, guys often get to skate. Well, let's be fair. Guys often get to skate if they're single.
Oh, I see.
But
that.
Single women are often like, well, you don't have anything else going on.
So you can we're going to overload you.
You can be the mule or runner for everybody else who's doing all of this. And you just have to smile and say, you know, I really like to spend this doing that. And if you really want to go, if you want to play the Jesus card, you can say, I really take this time for prayer and reflection and Netflix. You don't have to say the Netflix part. Yeah, you can lay down the Jesus card, because who's going to go, oh, well, prayer and reflection, we just really need you to make unending piles of nutballs that nobody wants to eat.
Yeah, and well, you know, if I can just draw a distinction here too, there are things like, you know, volunteering at church. It is the time when the most people are going to come in to hear the gospel. That's probably one that if you can do it, you definitely ought to do it. You know, the big core family things, if you can do it, you definitely ought to do it. You know, the neighborhood association or the whatever, where they're just kind of casual, you know, they like, I kind of call them like, this sounds bad for the people that are in this, but kind of second tier friendships. Like, these are not my best friends that know everything about me. These are the people that I really like and I see sometimes. And maybe you just can't get them into your Christmas.
You might not be able to. So have a block party instead. Or pop in. Pop in for an hour. An hour is good. It's also better for the waistline. Because it's the 3 hours of chatting that get us going. I think I ate 3 pieces of cheesecake without even realizing. Because, you know, if you break it off a piece at a time, you can get through half of it and not realize it before the evening is over. I know that from firsthand experience.
Did you know that you can gain weight if you have 7,000 calories in 2 days? Or in a day?
I was hoping it was like the parting of the Red Sea, but it's really not. That's only, you know, that's a gastrologically only, you know, once in a millennia experience where God will take those calories away and you can eat whatever you want. it makes me sad that there aren't more miracles that way, but it just helps us to make smarter decisions. And what can you, I say this in the business workshops I do, so it's not just in the religious space. How will you have a better Christmas? In the business space, I say, how would you have a better holiday? How are you going to have a better holiday? You get headaches. We're all stressed out. How are you going to have a better holiday? What are you, if you were to ask advice from an elf, what would I do to have a much better holiday? What advice would they tell you? And most of us can make better decisions with that and be happier and less tense and actually more relaxed and better shape to deal with some of the more challenging situations that pop along when we're actually with our families. And how many movies are about being with your family and then all kinds of things being fascinating?
So if we can, you know, as we close, bring in this the beginning of this conversation and marry it to the end here. Mm-hmm. So we talked about, you know, you may have very tense family situations. If you also have slept 3.5 hours because you agreed to bake that or you agreed to stay up all night wrapping, you know, for the PTA, or you're single and somebody threw the Christmas party planning on you at the office, and you're volunteering at church, and you haven't slept 8 hours in 3.5 weeks, or, you know, since the last time you really had any kind of rest was Thanksgiving, and all of a sudden it's Christmas, when those really tense family things come up, you are primed to just explode. And the way to defuse the bomb is days and weeks ahead of time, so that you're not going in, you know, with bloodshot eyes going, nobody better cross me today.
And you cannot control your emotions if we don't have sleep or good blood sugar. You just can't do it. The spirit is willing, but the sleep is weak. And by the way, you made me think of this. Here's one thing you could do that would make a big difference for somebody for 2 hours is to say to your pastor, because talk about somebody who's trying to wrap presents, stay up all night, make all that happen. Pastors are fried at Christmas. And so if you said, hey, what could I help you do? You want me to come over and help you wrap stuff? What could I help you do? Tell me 2 hours worth of stuff that I could help take off your load so that you and your family aren't quite as tired this Christmas. There may be more joy in your pastor's house than there's been in a while. That'd be one thing to add to your list.
Hayden Shaw has been joining us on Stronger Together. By the way, if you want to find out more about Hayden, you can check out peopledrivenresults.com. If a lot of this is sounding like, oh man, this is really hitting home. One of the things that Hayden does is help churches navigate the generational space and how do you reach multiple generations and still stay who you are as a church, you can find out more. There's information available at peopledrivenresults.com. You want to know more about just this whole family thing and how to navigate it? It's been one of my favorite books in the last 2 or 3 years. Generational IQ, Christianity Isn't Dying, Millennials Aren't the Problem, and The Future is Bright. That's available wherever books are sold. And just as we head into this, take a breath, make a list, realize you're not Superman, and if you do all those things, I mean, I think you can enjoy this, right?
That was Stronger Together, a show about growing in marriage, parenting, relationships, and community. Subscribe to the Shine.fm podcast to catch every episode of Stronger Together, available on the iTunes podcast app and wherever podcasts are available.